A former U.S. State Department official reacts to a Pentagon assessment on North Korea. It's Monday, November 6th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You're part of the program. Join us on any of our VOA Asia social media platforms. Also ahead, a typhoon proves fatal as it blasts through Vietnam. Pakistan battles opponent to the polio vaccine. Immigration is turning a Midwest city into a haven for international cuisine. All on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump embarking on a five-nation Asian trip aimed at pressuring North Korea to end its pursuit of nuclear weapons warned Sunday that no one, no dictator, no regime should underestimate American resolve. He told U.S. military personnel at Yokota Air Base in Japan that together with our allies, America's warriors are prepared to defend our nation using the full range of our unmatched capabilities.
No one, no dictator, no regime, and no nation should underestimate ever American resolve. Every once in a while in the past, they underestimated us. It was not pleasant for them, was it? It was not pleasant.
Trump added, history has proven over and over that the road of the tyrant is a steady march toward poverty, suffering, and servitude, but the path of strong nations and free people, certain of their values and confident in their futures, is a proven path toward prosperity and peace. A senior administration official traveling with Trump said that much of his talks with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and others, leaders throughout the 13-day trip will center on thwarting Pyongyang's nuclear ambitions. All of that comes on the heels of an assessment from the Pentagon that a ground invasion of North Korea is the only way to locate and destroy with complete certainty all components of Kim Jong-un's nuclear weapons program. Two House Democrats in a letter to the Pentagon had asked about casualty assessments in a possible conflict with North Korea. And Rear Admiral Michael J. Dumont of the Joint Staff said the United States is evaluating North Korea's ability to target heavily populated areas of South Korea with long-range artillery, rockets, and ballistic missiles. We welcome to VOA Asia again Evans Revere, former principal, a deputy assistant secretary for East Asian and Pacific Affairs. Evans, how do you react to that Pentagon assessment?
It's very stark. It's very troubling. And I think it's very realistic. Anyone familiar with the situation on the Korean Peninsula and certainly with the prospect and potential for military conflict and knowing what it will take to deal with North Korea militarily, if that's the decision that's ultimately made, will have listened to that and will have heard some very, very familiar assessments.
Is there any way that that is in any way posturing whatsoever toward North Korea?
I don't think so. I think the context in which that was made, it was a letter that was sent to the committee after some hearings in which members of Congress asked for a frank assessment. And that's what they got, and it's a very realistic overview of what it would take if a decision is made to try to resolve this through military means.
Well, is there any way you could envision that such a ground invasion by the U.S. would take place?
No, I just find it not credible, quite frankly. The only sort of military action that I could see the United States engaging in is in defense of itself or in defense of its allies. If North Korea were to take some initial military action. Other than that, preemptive or preventive strikes by the United States would almost certainly lead to a North Korean retaliation. It might even lead to a North Korean initial strike if they were convinced that the United States was going to hit them. And, of course, once that takes place, we are at war with the consequences that the Pentagon spelled out in that that report.
With the president now in Asia and North Korea most likely on top of everyone's agenda, what can happen now? What do you see happening?
Well, there's good news in all of this, and that is the president is taking an unusually long trip through Asia. He'll have an opportunity to engage in a series of important bilateral and multilateral meetings. He'll have an opportunity to speak with leaders in a number of countries and engage our allies and partners directly. And for any policymaker, for any government official, that's normally a very good thing, especially if we're dealing with the level of tension and potential for confrontation that we're dealing right now. To have the president out there in the region to see and get a sense of the reality of what's happening out there, and to be able to engage directly with allies and partners. That's what you want the president to be doing under normal circumstances.
And do you think he will be doing this?
Well, what I just said was the good news. Now let me convey the bad news. In the view of many observers, and I share some elements of this view, at almost every stop on this trip, there are going to be opportunities for the president to perhaps go off script. There will be opportunities for him to perhaps irritate or get on the wrong side of allies and partners, or in some cases to allow himself to be flattered into making concessions that he ought not to make, or to say things that are going to either escalate tensions, as some of his remarks have in recent weeks, or even, in the view of some, to undermine America's position in the region, undermine our moral authority, and perhaps even exacerbate disputes regarding trade and other issues. So that's the downside, and it's going to be extremely important for the president's advisors to keep him on message, to keep him engaged on the substance of these issues, to keep him well apprised of the downside of doing what the president occasionally does, which is to engage in Twitter and saying things in Twitter that perhaps are best left unsaid. And so discipline, good briefings, attentiveness to the script, and a very clear understanding of what we're trying to achieve on this trip is going to be absolutely essential for this president, perhaps more than any president who's been out in the region.
Obviously, this is speculation, but what do you expect from Kim Jong-un?
That's the wild card in all of this. It's in keeping with past practice, the North Koreans will say a lot, almost certainly. They already have issued some warnings to the United States to be careful of the language that it uses on this trip. Whether they will take any specific physical or kinetic action, it's really hard to say. No doubt you've seen the reports that they may be having some problems at their nuclear testing site because of the possible collapse of the mountain over which these nuclear tests take place. But there's plenty of potential for the North Koreans to do something like a missile launch or something else. Just to remind the president, to remind the United States, and remind the region that they're there and they need to be dealt with.
Evans Revere is the former principal, a deputy assistant secretary for East Asian and Pacific Affairs. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. North Korea and trade are high on Donald Trump's agenda in his first visit as president to Asia. Heavy rain and high winds force Malaysians to flee. Smog covers Pakistan and India, causing accidents and illness. Reports say U.S. anti-insurgent airstrikes kill Afghan civilians in Kunduz. And a U.S. official says Myanmar must resettle the Rohingya in their own villages. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. As VOA Asia continues, Typhoon Damri has blasted Vietnam's south central coast, killing at least 27 people. Disaster officials say Damri has blown off the roofs of more than 1,000 homes, uprooted trees, and knocked down electricity poles. The province of Con Hoa lost 14 people when houses collapsed or were washed away by floods, according to the provincial disaster agency. That agency said more than 300 homes were completely destroyed. About 25,000 hotels and others lost their roofs. It said 112 boats sank in the storm. Power was off in many areas and dozens of flights had been canceled. As a precaution, thousands of people were evacuated to higher ground before the typhoon made landfall. Damri is the strongest storm to hit the area in the past 16 years, according to NASA. Meanwhile, at least three people have been killed and almost 2,000 evacuated after a severe storm triggered the worst flooding in years in Malaysia's Penang State. Many streets in Penang's capital of Georgetown, that's a UNESCO World Heritage Site and a destination of foreign and domestic tourists, were submerged in deep, dirty water. Authorities said the rains were probably associated with Typhoon Damri. Pakistan is one of only three nations in the world that still report cases of polio. The other two are Afghanistan and Nigeria. But an ongoing effort is slowly making progress toward eradicating the disease. VOA's Kevin Enochs has more.
Raise your hands if you know what polio is.
Pakistani music star Salman Ahmad is using his pop star status to end polio in Pakistan.
How much away from polio? Zero?
The musician is hoping his music can overcome years of anti-vaccine propaganda by the Taliban.
When I arrived here, there was a lot of confusion. There's a lot of chaos because of, the Taliban spreading this, disinformation that there's something in the polio vaccine which is un-Islamic, or it's a Western plot to make Muslim males sterile.
Polio is still a problem in Pakistan, partly because Taliban extremists have targeted vaccine workers in the past, killing dozens over the past decade. Despite the danger, vaccinators like Saida Banu, who had two children with polio, one of whom died, continue to urge people to get vaccinated.
I take interest in this work, especially because of my children, one who has polio and another who died due to polio, and I want to help the cause. My children are like this, and so I want to make sure it doesn't happen to other children. I want them to be normal. That's why I do this work.
The new campaign is making so much progress against polio that high-ranking public health officials are optimistic about beating the disease.
Some years ago, we were down to double figures around polio, and then we had an upsurge again. But this time around, Pakistan, through very steady, concerted efforts of principally reaching marginalized populations, particularly in the conflict-affected, insecure areas of the country, has made tremendous inroads.
The greatest cause for optimism is the numbers themselves. In 2014, Pakistan reported 300 cases of polio, but in 2016, there were only 20.
We have our eye on the ball, but we will not let this drop just because we have had, let's say, unprecedented success. The job isn't done until the job is done. With polio, you can't afford to even have one or two cases.
So far this year, Pakistan is tantalizingly close to ending the devastating disease with only 5 reported cases. Kevin Enochs, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, flash floods kill 5 in Malaysia. Its army deploys to rescue thousands of the displaced. In Japan, President Trump stresses unity on North Korea. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. We are happy you are with us here on VOA Asia. A city in the American Midwest is home to immigrants and refugees from 40 nations and a blossoming ethnic restaurant scene. As VOA's June So reports, Columbus, Ohio's taste buds and economy are both benefiting.
This Momogar restaurant is barely more than a counter and 2 tiny tables inside an international grocery. Nevertheless, the Nepalese and Tibetan eatery that opened last year has quickly risen to become Yelp's number one restaurant in Columbus.
Momo is dumpling. We make a lot of dumplings. We are making probably several thousand dumplings a day. We have to keep up with the demand.
Nepalese immigrant Funso Lama is the owner, chef of Momo Gar.
You could say Momo is almost like a national dish of Nepal because it's so popular. So I thought thought it would be nice to bring the flavor to Columbus.
Lama was right about it. Her signature dish, called Jol Momo, and other dumplings that are made from scratch in the little open kitchen, have brought loyal customers like Wendy Noble.
All those are flavorful and super tasty and filling and really cheap, so it's a great affordable meal. So that's why we keep coming back.
A recent study shows that foreign-born residents make up more than 9% of the city's population. That has driven a boon in Columbus's ethnic food scene.
That we have ethnic restaurants from over 40 nationalities, and we're often adding new ones. We recently found a market that is offering Sudanese food. Without leaving Columbus, you can explore all these different cuisines.
Columbus food blogger Bethia Wolf launched Columbus Food Adventures in 2010. She guides clients to explore little-known ethnic restaurants, all within a few blocks of one another.
We visit Indian, a Mexican bakery, Nigerian, Vietnamese, and Somali. And then we're teaching them a little bit about their cuisine, about the dishes they're going to eat.
The ethnic food tour is popular among local residents and tourists as well.
I'm from California. It's just a great way to try new foods and meet new people and learn about different cultures. It was great.
Now we will definitely come back to these restaurants because they're all within 10 minutes of where we live and all of them have been delicious.
The influx of immigrants to the city has also helped revitalize once-defunct suburban strip malls as they open shops and restaurants.
There's approximately 150 to 200,000 immigrants and refugees in the Central Ohio area. The total local and state taxes paid by immigrants is $340 million.
Mama has a plan that would help increase the number.
Employees, I have about 14 or 15 of them. The reason I have so many right now is I am training a lot of them because we are opening a second location in about 4 weeks.
Lama says she's happy that the flavor she brought from her native home is embraced in her adopted one. For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Columbus, Ohio.
Now this news alert from VOA Asia. Philippine bishops have led thousands in a call to stop the killings in that country's anti-drug campaign. Thousands urge peace in an anti-Trump protest in South Korea as the U.S. president makes his stop in Japan. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. The second phase of a campaign to vaccinate tens of thousands of Rohingya refugee children against cholera got underway this weekend in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh. VOA's Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The oral cholera vaccination campaign, which is being led by the World Health Organization, is targeting nearly 180,000 children between the ages of 1 and 5 years. They will receive an additional dose of the vaccine for added protection. The children had received a first dose of the vaccine when the campaign was launched on October 10th. At that time, the oral cholera vaccine was administered to more than 700,000 people above the age of one. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says health workers also will give all children up to the age of five oral polio vaccines during the campaign to protect them against this crippling disease. He says so far, no confirmed cases of cholera have been reported.
But there is a risk, and this is why we are doing this oral cholera vaccination, and WHO has set up a lab together with the ministry to do water quality monitoring, and the results show that this testing of drinking water, that only 17% of the samples collected and tested from various settlements met Bangladesh and WHO standards during the reported period.
More than 600,000 Rohingya refugees escaping violence in Myanmar have arrived in Cox's Bazar since late August. They are living in congested, squalid, unsanitary makeshift settlements, a perfect breeding ground for cholera and other diseases. Jazarevich says there's been an outbreak of acute watery diarrhea. At present, though, none of the lab-tested cases have been confirmed as cholera. He says the most serious health risks are acute respiratory infections and measles. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the death toll from a typhoon in Vietnam has risen to 27. China has extended its national anthem disrespect law to Hong Kong. All of these big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now on VOA Asia when President Donald Trump called on Congress to abolish the diversity visa program after last Tuesday's terror attack in New York City. It sent shockwaves through countries that view the program as a ticket to the American dream. The lottery was started to provide opportunities for countries with low rates of immigration to the U.S. Will the program actually be cut? Well, as VOA's Keita Kostretsi reports, a proposal is already in the Senate, all part of legislation on immigration reform.
President Trump called the diversity visa lottery a disaster for the country.
This program grants visas not on a basis of merit, but simply because applicants are randomly selected in an annual lottery. And the people put in that lottery are not that country's finest.
A White House official told VOA that ending the program is part of immigration reform principles the White House submitted to Congress and is included in the so-called RAISE Act. The Reforming American Immigration for Strong Employment Act, sponsored by two Republican senators, has been awaiting markup since February. Similar legislation was introduced in the House in September. But a Detroit-area lawyer who leads a Muslim advocacy group told AP that eliminating the program is a bad idea.
Diversity has always been what has allowed us as a country to stand as a beacon of hope and a beacon of strength and a beacon of resolve. And any call, political or not, to really close that door and to really extinguish that flame of diversity to the world is troubling.
She says the lottery program does not present any particular threat relative to other kinds of immigration. Washington immigration attorney Kenneth Rinsler agrees.
It's not legitimate to use the recent terrorist attack to knock this program because they undergo the same vetting as anybody else.
Republicans say they will take up an immigration bill in the new year. Whether that will happen depends on many factors, including political ones, such as the Russia investigation and other administration priorities.
First of all, there are very few legislative days left in this year, and they seem to be focused more on tax issues. What they do next year, which happens to now become an election year, an off-year election, it's hard to say.
The diversity visa program was created in 1990 for would-be Americans who don't have family in the U.S. or an employer to sponsor them or who aren't refugees. The diversity visa, also known as the green card lottery, is the only option. It requires a high school degree or a few years of work experience just to qualify. Keita Kostretsi, VOA News, Washington.
And a story out of Tokyo you might be interested in. An AI, or an artificial intelligence character, has been made an official resident of a busy central Tokyo district, with the virtual newcomer resembling a chatty 7-year-old boy. They named him Shibuya Mirai. Doesn't exist physically, but he can have text conversations with humans on the widely used LINE messaging app. It makes him Japan's first and maybe the world's first artificial intelligence bot to be granted a place on a real-life local registry. His name means future in Japanese, supposed to be a first grader at an elementary school. He replies to messages and makes lighthearted alterations to selfies he has sent. Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. Let's hear from you at VOA Asia Facebook and our email at voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, John Ellison, our managing director, Diane Gow, and our TM, Jim Stevenson, David Byrd, Skylar Ogden. I'm Ira Melman. Enjoy your day.